Discussions in Depth Psychology is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. Your host is Bonnie Bright.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Discussions in Depth Psychology, which is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. I'm Bonnie Bright, and I earned my PhD in Depth Psychology at Pacifica. And this series is dedicated to bringing you discussions with some of the remarkable individuals who are contributing profoundly to the world in many different depth psychological ways. And today I'd like to introduce you to Sherry Steinkellner, who's an award-winning writer and producer for some well-known TV shows and for musicals and theaters, both on and off Broadway. And Sherry has recently written a play with visionary teacher Jean Houston called Tonight in Dreamland, which is going to be previewed at Pacifica on March 4th, 2017. And best of all, Sherry is a student in the Engaged Humanities and the Creative Life program at Pacifica now. So thank you so much for being my guest today, Sherry.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here because we're going to be talking in some detail about this play that I just mentioned, which is called Tonight in Dreamland. And it's so exciting that you're doing it with Jean Houston, whom I also had the pleasure of speaking with for Discussions in Depth Psychology just a few days ago. And so we'll be getting all the juicy details about your collaboration together and about the project itself and a lot more. But let me just first share your bio with everybody so that they have some background on you, and then we'll jump in from there.
Okay, thank you.
Sherry Steinkellner has 4 Emmys, 2 Golden Globes, a Writers Guild, People's Choice, Parents' Choice, and BAFTA Award for writing, producing TV's Cheers and Disney's Teacher's Pet with her husband Bill. Sherry received her first Tony nomination for writing Sister Act, the musical, and is an Ovation nominee and Indie Award winner for book and lyrics of her new fashioned musical, Hello, My Baby. She's written books for the musicals Princesses, Jailbirds on Broadway, and Mosaic off-Broadway. Currently at work on the new quantum comedy, Tonight in Dreamland, with Dr. Jean Houston, Sherry also teaches writing at Stanford University and UCSB and directs award-winning youth theater across the U.S. and in Santa Barbara, California, where she and Bill live and raise their 3 favorite writers, artists, and children, Kit, Teddy, and Emma. So, Sherry, wow, this is so exciting to hear about all the amazing success that you've had in the world of writing and TV and sitcoms. But here's the big question, I guess, that we maybe should start with, and that is, what's a nice sitcom writer like you doing in depth psychology?
That's a really good question, and I would say finding my shadow, figuring out what all this stuff that I've done for all these decades means. And it's a pretty interesting process.
Well, I can imagine that there's a lot of correlations that really happen between the writing process itself and also the process of self-reflection or self-inquiry or even inquiry into other people's characters, which, of course, are all aspects of ourselves if you begin to look at it from a depth psychology perspective. And I'm really interested to know, as we begin to hone in on this upcoming play that you have created together with Jean Houston, how that process has been at work for you. So maybe before we go forward, though, it'd be really great to know how you first got to know Jean Houston and what was the impetus behind collaborating on a play together.
Well, like so many good stories, this one started with a dream. I started having these dreams at night, really, really interesting, weird dreams, over and over and over again, and I couldn't figure them out. And my therapist said, well, maybe you could play with them during your waking hours. Have you ever meditated? And I responded, meditation involves sitting down and shutting up. I do not do either of those things well. And he said, how about going up to Esalen or Spirit Rock and just trying it out? You know, have a novel experience. So I found myself up in Esalen, and the meditation class happened to be all sold out, but they had an opening in the class that was being held in the big white tent on a cliff. And he said, do you want to go see Jean Houston talk about the hero's journey? And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I teach writing. I didn't really at that time know who Jean was because I was fully immersed in my writing world, not in the world of psychology and certainly not depth psychology. So I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. And I kind of went into this white tent on the cliff and had my head blown off. This has been here all this time and I didn't know it. So I followed Jean to Deepak Chopra one day, and she announced at that seminar that she was going to become the chancellor of a new program called Leadership and Social Transformation. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. I want to see what this woman who knows everything is like when she's doing something for the first time. So my impetus to join Cohort 1 at Meridian's Leadership and Social Transformation program was to see what Jean looks like doing something new. And what I didn't realize was how much more that wish would come true than I ever expected, because it was there at our very first residential that she told this story, this idea that she had about one little girl who goes on to live three different adult lives and then integrates. And it was a novel that she had begun to write. She had a few notes and a couple of chapters, and she'd never gone further with it. This is something that she'd written many, many years ago. And I don't even know why she told us about it. But afterwards, I, the freshman student in her first week, just went up to her and said, have you ever considered that might be a play? And what I didn't realize is that I was stepping into her road not taken. That years ago, when she was just out of school, she had these theatrical opportunities that just ended up sort of filtering their way into her teaching and her leadership, but she never really got to do the theater full on. And so that's a long story in a short telling of how we started writing this play together.
Well, I love that. I mean, it certainly seems like there's a lot of synchronicity at work. You know, as you mentioned, you have no idea why she told that story at that particular time, and she probably doesn't either. I don't know. But I love the expression that I just wanted to back up a minute, because you said when you first saw Jean and heard her speaking that you had your head blown off. That was the expression that you used. And I really love that, because I think that a lot of people who kind of land in this particular field, and I mean depth psychology or things that are related to depth psychology, again, this idea of accessing the unconscious or becoming aware of things that were not necessarily in our conscious minds, there's a whole new world out there that's just so vast and so amazing. And when I first discovered it, I remember just wanting to learn everything that I possibly could. And so, of course, by you having the opportunity to actually spend some time with Jean and to be able to seek her out and be part of that program is really amazing. And I'm thinking, as I say all this, that Jean really has built her career in a lot of ways on leadership and social transformation. And it's a very profound topic that is so much needed in our world. But you do see that the opportunities that she ends up following up on and the collaborations that she's doing are very much related to that, but also are often very fundamentally depth psychological ideas. And of course, Jean was around for the creation of Pacifica, as she notes. She was affiliated with Steve Eisenstadt, who is the current chancellor and president there. And of course, they collaborated together probably in some similar ways that you are doing with Jean to found Pacifica in the early days, along with some other people, of course. But I'm, having said all this, I guess where I'm going, or where I'd like to go maybe next, is to move more deeply into this play that you guys are doing together and the whole idea of it becoming a play and what the value of it actually is. Because I think it's one thing to read a novel, and I think that there are messages that can come through in novels just as much as can come through in books that are not fiction. But to actually bring it to a play kind of makes it almost more 3D, if you know what I mean. It's more three-dimensional. And so it has definitely a different impact on the audience than it would necessarily have for people who are reading a book in written form, for example. So can you start off maybe talking about the value to you of doing it as a play? And perhaps in order to do that, it might be a good idea to talk about what the story is.
Well, it's the story of three women who have a very strange experience in this theater on this night with and without this audience. So it plays deeply with the idea that, like you just said, what we think we know isn't all we know, and that there's more to it. And the reason I think for doing it in live theater as opposed to writing it in prose or making a movie is that experience, that transformative shared experience of being with other people, friends and or strangers, and experiencing something all in real time live, I haven't found a way to duplicate it in any other medium. We came close in TV when we were doing shows with a live audience, because you do have that experience where the actors and the audience are in conversation with one another, particularly in comedy, where the laughs let us know that the audience is in conversation with us. But later shows that I wrote that had live studio audiences, like Cheers and The Jeffersons and many, many others, play on TV where, you know, you're watching them at home through a screen, and it's just not the same as being there and breathing the same air.
Well, it is interesting, and particularly to me, because being able to have that live experience really invokes this whole idea of being present for something. And of course, that then leads to the idea of embodiment, which is a very key depth psychological theme, that notion of being in our bodies and experiencing ourselves with our bodies and being present to the unfolding of each moment. And I say that because Jung himself was so interested in the thematic piece of things. And in addition to symbolism, of course, and archetypes and all of the wonderful things that we know Jungian psychology and depth psychology to be about, we also, I think, are highly aware, most of us, that the embodiment piece is very critical. And so being able to tap into insights through the power of emotion, through the power of being able to witness something that is taking place in front of our eyes, and actually also following that idea of witness, to be able to be part of a group, a collective, an audience that is experiencing, each having their own experience, but experiencing something very profound together, I think can be really powerful as well.
Without question, the very first play my Nana Betty ever took me to when I was a very little girl was Peter Pan. And there comes that moment in the second act where that little light effect that we call Tinkerbell is going to die unless we all clap our hands. And, you know, at the time I was only 4 years old or 5 years old, so I was just clapping my hands to save the fairy. Later on, when I was a grown up and saw it again and took my own kids to see it, I know it's just a light effect, but it's still real. Even though I know it's just a light effect, it's still real. I still have to clap. I still have to make it so, because we are all in this moment, have accepted this reality, and we are now part of it, physically part of it. And that's one of the things that Jean and I are trying to find the exact right recipe for in this play, so that by the time we get from the beginning of it, where the audience is separate from the actors and we know that we've just come to a show and the lights go down and we're going to watch a show, to losing ourselves in it so that we feel by the end that we are part of it and need to help make it work physically, like that, having that Tinkerbell moment, that's what we now have to learn by putting it in front of audiences and finding out what does the audience need in order to come along on this journey. And when Jean goes out to speak, she is speaking to people who are there to see her and to hear her and to learn from her. In the theater, sometimes you're just playing to people who have a season ticket and they don't know what this is and they didn't particularly sign up for this, and we got to bring them along too. So it's an interesting chemistry experiment.
Yes, and you alluded to the idea of losing ourselves in it as the audience. And what occurred to me when you said that is, in some ways, we have to lose ourselves in it in order to find ourselves. Again, that's a totally depth perspective. It's the idea of being able to peel those layers into the unconscious, into the things that we don't really know about ourselves or about the collective, and also the things that are in the collective unconscious, which are archetypal things, which are arising for all of us in the culture. So I think that there's so much value to being able to engage in it in this way. So moving a little more deeply into this, I wanted to read the description that is listed on the Pacifica website for the play, which again is going to be presented in early March 2017 for those who are able to attend, but also hopefully maybe going to Broadway. I'm not sure if we mentioned that, but it's kind of an exciting thought that other people might have access to this. So let me read the description, and then I want to ask you a question about that.
Okay.
An astrophysicist, an anthropologist, and an actress walk into a theater. But when a quantum shift causes their stages to converge and their audience to vanish, the two scientists and the superstar must pool their collective resources, brains, hearts, and guts, to discover how they got there and why. So this seems to me to be a very interesting description of what we often call the hero's journey or the heroine's journey. Now, of course, for those who know that idea in detail, there are some parts here that are not necessarily alluded to in this short description, but I definitely see the huge opportunity for depth psychological themes in this particular play, Tonight in Dreamland. I would love to hear how you feel that the depth psychological themes are emerging in the play, and also how some of the depth psychological tenets that you understand and know about made their way into the writing, perhaps even without your knowing.
Oh, boy, you're asking a first-year depth psychology student in the humanities program at Pacifica to do some real PhD stuff here. Okay. How about we play this intuitively? You give me a theme, and I'll come up with an intuitive response.
That sounds good. I like it. Okay, let's do that. I can name themes, and then maybe some of them will not show up. But actually, this is kind of a depth psychological game. It reminds me of the word association test, which Jung developed very early in his career, and which has become a cornerstone of so much of the psychoanalysis that we see today. So let's see what emerges from this. Okay, so, well, this one is probably obvious then, but let me just throw this at you, and you can tell me how then this depth psychological theme shows up in the play, or how you used it, even knowingly, if that's the case, in the writing of the play. So, okay, first of all, how about dreams?
Ah, well, the title is Tonight in Dreamland. We talk a lot in this show about the dream time. The anthropologist has spent the bulk of her later years in Australia working and studying the dream time and has not achieved that transition to experience it. The dream time where there is this ongoing, ever creative, ever co-creative world that we and the gods or great creators are in collaboration on. We find in the play that that also coincides with what the astrophysicist is studying in quantum physics and the superimposition of states. So one is coming at it from a cultural lens, one is coming at it from a scientific lens, and then we have the actress, who is, I think, my way into this conversation, and for many people in the theater, many of the audience members, will be our way into it, because that's the character who represents how little training we have in either of these other two worlds. And yet, she lives in a kind of dream time or quantum reality every time she gets on stage and, like you said earlier, like I said earlier, loses herself in the process and creates this other reality, this willing suspension of disbelief. She is actually embodying a kind of dream time. So we're coming at it from three angles, trying to explore a dream-like state. For me, dreams, although I haven't done enough dream tending with the aforementioned Steven Eisenstadt yet to really be able to manage my dreams proficiently, but I trust them. And sometimes when stuck at a writing impasse or I just don't know what to do next, I'll take a nap. Or at night, I'll go to bed and I'll say, okay, think about this. Wake up with the answer. Just come on, Sarah, do it. And I can't say that I've got it down to any kind of a formula, but a lot of times when I wake up, I'll have something to write some way in. And a lot of times when that writing begins, it's like automatic writing. I don't even know what it is. So sometimes the writing process, at best, when I'm really in it, the writing process can feel like a dream. And then I'll remember it sort of like you remember a dream when you wake up, and I'll go, oh, I think this was about that, and then I'll go back and read it, and it's like remembering a dream.
Oh, that is such a great example and so well told about exactly how the unconscious can be at work in our lives and how those kinds of symbols can emerge into our waking consciousness, whether it's through a sleeping dream or, as you mentioned, not always when you're asleep. And in fact, I have this quote from Jung, which I really love, and I refer to it often. And he says, as a plant produces its flower, so the psyche creates its symbols. Every dream is evidence of this process. Thus, through dreams, intuitions, impulses, and other spontaneous happenings, instinctive forces influence the activity of consciousness. So, I mean, it's just kind of a synopsis of his belief and, of course, what has really blossomed into this whole practice and study and field of depth psychology, and that is that these things that are under the surface, that are symbolic, can emerge into our lives and have such a powerful effect on us. And so that leads me to another thing that I consider depth psychological, and of course, it's important on a very global level, but that is the theme of creativity. So I think you kind of just touched on that, but maybe you can say something more about your own process of creativity in working with these particular characters and this theme for the play itself.
One of the most rewarding things that can happen to a creative writer, and I think all writers are creative writers, is when your characters, if you're writing fiction, or your ideas become your writing partners, which is to say you're not driving anymore. You're riding shotgun to all of these ideas or characters that are telling you what they want to have told. So I've been doing this, gosh, I've been a professional writer since the 80s, and I knew that there was a difference when I stopped working it and it started working through me. I just didn't have the language for it. Then I come to know Jean, and now I'm at Pacifica, and I'll take the next class from Susan Rowland or Jennifer Selig or Jonathan Young, and they'll teach me things, and I'll go, oh, that's what I was doing. I had no idea. And I think that is the point, and what you're saying that Jung is telling us is the point, too, to have no idea and still go along for the ride.
All right. Well, maybe let's just do one more of these, because for me, it's just bringing up so much rich material. And I think that it's so fascinating to be able to have your perspective on this because of what you do and where you're coming from. So maybe say something about the role of archetypes in this particular play, because, of course, as I read in the description and you mentioned earlier on, we're talking about an astrophysicist, an anthropologist, and an actress. And what happens for them is that they converge. And so, first of all, these three different characters are archetypal characters, and what's happening to them is kind of an archetypal process. Can you maybe just say more about what archetypes emerged for you during the writing or that you are able to look at now and identify in the process?
Well, interestingly, they tell us writers to write what you know. And with this play, for the first time, I am writing what I don't know. And it means that I've had to really learn a lot from Jean and from Google about things that I don't generally dwell in. For example, my intellect. Science. I'm not a science person. I'm a words person. And so I had really narrowly defined myself as somebody who is interested in these certain things and good at these certain things, which are verbal, emotional. You know, I was pretty good in all that stuff, but to dance with these characters, I had to get my learning up in a lot of different areas. And I was writing a paper trying to understand more about the symbology of this play, and I learned about the triune goddess. I wanted to write about women of a certain age. I wanted to write about the crones, who have, each in different ways, their fulfilling experiences. Two of them are wives and mothers. One of them has not had the experience of bearing children. They all have made their choices in their lives and gone all the way in the direction of those choices. One to be part of a tribe, the anthropologist. One to explore the universe, the astrophysicist. And one, to explore the various aspects and the various personalities that dwell within her by embodying them, the actress, the shapeshifter. So certainly in writing these characters, or like I said earlier, in dancing with them, because sometimes they just want to write themselves, I've gotten a chance, and I think this is a better way to say it, of touching on those parts of myself that have not been honored or explored. And the play is about these three women who have made these very big choices in their lives to do one thing and do it very well and sacrifice the other things that they were capable of doing but didn't have the time or the bandwidth for because of the thing that they did do. So, for example, we have one character who is sort of, golly, she could be played by Streisand or Madonna or Cher. But she is a superstar and an amazing singer. We have another character, the astrophysicist, who was told when she was in the fifth grade to shut up and sit down, that she was told by her choir teacher, and she was made fun of by her fellow choir students because her voice was too big, and she hasn't sung since. They both have the same instrument, but one explored it and heightened it, and the other one shut it down. Now, the actress, on the other hand, was discovered in her high school play, plucked out of high school and went to Broadway and had a career from there and became a superstar like Streisand did. And she has not had the opportunity to explore her intellect or identify herself as the scientist she could have been and might have been if she'd had her voice shut down when she was back in the fifth grade. So it's about completing ourselves and knowing that even if you're way up there in life, even if you're five decades in, you can still play with, and maybe even more than ever, you can play with those parts of yourself that you haven't had a chance to play with.
I really love that, because you're tapping into one of the most powerful processes that are depth psychological, and that is that capacity to embrace all those parts of ourselves, even if we weren't aware of them. So, of course, we have to first come to consciousness that they even exist, and then to develop some kind of relationship with them. So I think what you've just described is a very archetypal and depth psychological approach to the play. And it's funny because, as you mentioned, the characters often kind of write themselves. And so I think that this is a really good example of how those archetypes are at work in our lives all the time. And they will emerge when the time is right for each one of us. And so by those characters writing themselves, I think that those particular archetypes are coming to the fore and saying, I want to be known. I'm here. You know, I'm having some kind of influence in your life. And so that goes not only for you as the writer, but for Jean, who is collaborating and writing with you, and also the audience who ends up being there and knowing about it and seeing the play. I think that it will have some profound impact on them as well. So as we begin to wrap up here, I'm really curious about what your plans are for the future and how you think that your education and depth psychological perspective, which is growing, of course, as you point out, and you know, you're somewhat new to the program at Pacifica, but how do you think that that will continue to influence your work in the future?
Before we do that, can I dial it back to Jean for a second? Because I really think that what you touched on was so interesting. I told you earlier in our conversation that part of my goal that I couldn't even articulate was to see Jean in what I have now learned is beginner's mind. The fun of playing in this sandbox with her, she who has taught so many people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, to find these hidden properties in themselves. The fun of being on board across the Skype screen or in her living room when she finds new corners of her own ability is, I gotta tell you, if nothing else ever happened with this, I'm good. You know, I've had the experience of a lifetime. But, or and, to talk about plans for the future, well, with this play specifically, Jean wants to see it done, and I want what she wants. I wrote a big Broadway show. I know how the creative experience changes when a show goes from being creative to being commercial. It's probably what sent me back to school so I could understand some of my reactions to that disconnect. Broadway's a tough town, and I love Santa Barbara. So I'm not leading the charge for this show to go to Broadway. However, I'm not going to stand in its way either. I want this to be what Jean wants it to be. Personally, I'm so excited by the process of doing this and working with her that I could stay in Processville or go back to Processville. One of the things that we're finding, Bonnie, is that, and oh God, it's been a joy not to talk about world affairs or certainly national affairs for this good long time. But we wrote most of the draft that we're going to be doing at Pacifica on March 4th before the election. The world, our world, has changed, and it continues to change very quickly, so quickly that it becomes challenging to try and keep up with it in the writing of this play. This play has to exist a little bit out of time because we just can't keep up with it. The changes, they're happening every hour or sooner. But that said, so many of the things that have become articulated and we've become focused on as a national community since the election we want to honor in the play, so that the things that we are really focusing on as problems, we are kind of shining a light on some possible ways to look at the world that can activate us in a very positive way and help us be better national and world citizens. That feels very lofty as I say it, but we got to do what we can.
Yeah, well, and you're echoing exactly what Jean has said and continues to say, too. You know, it's this idea of each of us doing whatever it is that we can do to contribute to the greater collective and to be social activists and create that kind of social transformation that is so greatly needed right now. And, of course, that begins by applying that to ourselves. But there's so much that each one of us can do as we begin to become more conscious and begin to become aware of our own shadows and our own gifts in order to be able to start contributing that. And I just think it's so important. I'm really glad that you brought that up because together, you know, individually, you and Jean are both doing this. Jean has made a long career of this. She's very passionate about it. And I just love to see your mutual respect for one another and how much you both seem to be enjoying this collaboration. And hey, maybe you'll do some more together. I think that's really wonderful. And I think it's really important.
Thanks. I'm down for it. And the interesting thing is the last ingredient, the audience becomes the frosting on the cake that holds the layers together. So with this very early reading, the audience becomes very important to us because we learn so much about how we are working together in this live experience. And if audiences can sit through this 95-minute comedy, hopefully laughing their butts off, and come out of there going, huh, I hadn't really thought about that. Now, what do we do with that? What if that possibility exists in the world? How do I live my life? Then that'll be a good thing.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Well, Sherry, do you want to say something briefly about Hello, My Baby, the musical?
Well, Hello, My Baby was my fourth child. It was my late in life child. It's a musical that takes some of the greatest songs of the Great American Songbook, Irving Berlin, the Gershwins, Ubi Blake, and I have woven them into a new musical that is primarily young voices. We're doing it all over the country with high school and community theater groups to kind of bridge us to our American heritage. It has themes of immigration and social class and all kinds of gender and gender fluidity and bending. But it's set 100 years ago, and it's really connecting kids to our heritage in music, theater, comedy, and I just treasure it. So please come and visit our Facebook page and see what we're up to.
Wonderful. It's such wonderful work. I've been speaking with Sherry Steinkellner, who's an award-winning writer and producer for TV and for Broadway. And, of course, we've been discussing the play that she's written with visionary teacher Jean Houston called Tonight in Dreamland. And if you'd like to know more about the performance at Pacifica, I found it actually by going to the Pacifica website, pacifica.edu, and clicking on the link for the retreat. And then if you just look for the magnifying glass, the search icon there at the top right, you can type in Dreamland and find it. That's probably the easiest way that I can tell everybody to find it here. So again, go to pacifica.edu, click on the retreat, and then just do a search using that magnifying glass icon for Dreamland. And that should come right up. You can see it there. And again, that performance is going to be on Saturday, March 4th. And, of course, Jean Houston is also offering a free salon on Friday, March 3rd, which is called Emerging Myths, Emerging Archetypes, Everyday Life in the Quantum Universe. And that is a free evening salon for anybody who's interested in attending that. And that goes along with Pacifica's Introduction Day, which allows people, anybody who's interested in Pacifica or Depth Psychology, to come check out the campus, which is absolutely amazing. Check out the programs that are available there and to get to meet and know some of the other students that are there and some of the faculty. So it's a really great opportunity. I've attended many of those, and that was the kicker for me. When I decided to go to Pacifica, I attended that, and I knew within seconds of sitting down in one of those. So I don't know that happens for everybody, but it certainly was the case for me.
I'll second that emotion.
All right. Well, again, Sherry Steinkellner, thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
Thank you, Bonnie.
You've been listening to Discussions in Depth Psychology, powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute with host Bonnie Bright.